Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors writer for the Mercury News. Today's episode of Locked On Warriors is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting low carb protein bar I've ever had. The promo code Locked On is $10 off of your first box at builtbar.com. I'm here with Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle. And Connor, I want to just use today's show to talk about what we're hearing about the Warriors and the NBA draft. And I think it's a good time because the draft lottery and the combine were supposed to happen this week in Chicago. Instead, they've been postponed. We don't know when they'll be rescheduled, but I don't think that should really change much of the Warriors' thinking with their top five pick. Would it have been nice to have the combine and all the medical records that come with that? Yeah, but it doesn't sound like a lot of these guys in the mix at the top of the draft have real medical concerns that should, you know, raise red flags. Obviously, you would know more if you could test them. But I do want to start with this article that you wrote recently about why the Warriors aren't inclined to take a center at the top of the draft. And you mentioned Marquese Chriss specifically, that the Warriors are prepared to go into next season as their starting center. This lines up with what I'm hearing, too. I think you and I have basically been saying this the whole time, that the Warriors are not going to draft a center in the top five. But I want to kind of talk again specific to Marquese Chriss and what his role in that decision is.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people saw he had a breakout season last season, and I think the average fan is probably high on him, but there might be some skepticism just because he got a lot of minutes when they were, you know, losing big and obviously had the worst record in the NBA. But the Warriors really believe that he can be an impactful player for a winning team. He does a lot of winning, quote unquote, plays. You know, he's really good at some of the subtle aspects of the game, the dribble handoffs, the screens. I think he improved significantly defensively over the course of last season once he got more and more familiar with the Warriors system. And they feel like, you know, he's not necessarily a guy that's going to come in and average 20 and 10, but they don't need him to. You know, as you and I both know, the Warriors want that center position to be more of a fulcrum of that offense, you know, a guy who can post up on the block, kick out to open shooters and run the floor and throw down alley-oop dunks. And what I kind of have started to tell people is Marquese Chriss is kind of a good mix between like a David West type and a JaVale McGee, in that he's the passer that David West was, but he's the floor runner that JaVale McGee was. And that's why I think he makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's only 22 years old. He's got a very, a very cheap contract. Why would you spend $9-10 million on James Wiseman when you can pay Marquese Chriss $1.8 million? And even if you drafted someone like James Wiseman, there's no guarantee that he should be ahead of Marquese Chriss on the depth chart. And James Wiseman's only 2 years younger than Marquese Chriss.
Right. That's huge. I mean, 2 years younger, you know, five times as expensive and not guaranteed to be as good as Marquese Chriss. I mean, there's some real concerns about James Wiseman. Some people think he could be like the next Rudy Gobert. There's been Joel Embiid comparisons made with him. I've not been impressed with what I've seen from Wiseman. Like, it takes so much more than like, oh, he's 7 feet tall, he can sort of run the floor pretty well sometimes, and just a few flashes here and there to sell me on him as a top five pick. And look, I've been higher on Onyeka Okongwu from USC. And I'm thinking, like, my sense from the Warriors is that they're higher on him too versus Wiseman. I don't think they'll take a center in the top five or six of the draft here, but if they did, it would be Okongwu and not Wiseman.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing as well. And I actually really like Okongwu, but I just don't, generally speaking, love using a top five pick on a center.
Somebody who's gotten like the Bam Adebayo comparisons, right? He's really switchable. He just maybe he's not singularly as impactful as a Wiseman, but he just sort of fits into what a modern center needs to be a little bit more. And for those reasons, I think he would be higher on their board, but I agree with you. They're probably not going to be using a top five pick on a center regardless.
And there's a reason why Bam, you know, went later in the draft. You know, he was a late lottery guy at 14. You know, I think part of that had to do with the fact that he just wasn't overly productive at Kentucky. But part of that, too, is just there's a lot of questions about the development of big men in this league. You know, usually it takes a few years for a big man to start to come into his own in the NBA. And Marquese Chriss is a good example of that, you know, came into the league at 18, no, about to turn 19 years old, was, I believe, the youngest guy in that draft, was someone that wasn't even a huge recruit out of high school, kind of burst on the scene his freshman year at Washington, and then had a lot of growing pains in Phoenix and, you know, the couple other teams he played for. And now I feel like the Warriors kind of got him at the right time. And you know, more importantly, they know how to use him. I feel like he was used the wrong way in Phoenix and Houston. Yeah,
he's playing the wrong position. He's playing power forward there, and
he was like a stretch four.
Yeah.
And look, the guy can shoot, but that is not his best asset. And it never has been. And he's a good energy guy who can run the floor and do the dirty work. And, you know, I think that people saw him knock down some threes at Washington and fell a little bit too in love with that. And I think he is much more content to be throwing down alley-oops and blocking shots and, you know, passing out the open man.
Yeah, and I think we could put some blame on Marquese Chriss, too, for those. I think he was trying to fit into that mold as well. And, you know, I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg type thing, like where coaches telling him in Phoenix and Cleveland and Houston, hey, you got to shoot threes. You know, speaking with Marquese Chriss over the last few years, he basically said, I don't want to shoot threes anymore. I just want to get to the rim. Like you said, he's very happy doing that. Just to put a bow on the center position, and I want to, again, spend most of this podcast talking about the draft, but let's just, again, kind of figure out what the Warriors are going to do at center. If Marquese Chriss, if they are content with him as their starting center, they're still going to use that. They're still going to approach that position by committee. You're still going to get Draymond Green playing small ball minutes more than he was this past season. I think that's very much in the plan for them. Another reason why you don't use a top five pick on a center is because in crunch time, you're going to have Draymond Green at center, hopefully, if you're the Warriors, right? So why would you be wasting a top five pick on a player who's not going to be on the floor in the most important parts of the game most of the time? So with all of that, so you can kind of say, all right, you got Marquese Chriss for 20, 22 minutes a game, whatever it's going to be. You got Draymond Green for, I don't know, 6 to 8 minutes per game in small ball situations. All right, so when we're talking about maybe about, you know, that's 30 minutes between those two. You're looking at 18 minutes that you have to allot to other players at that position. You can give all 18 minutes to one player. Maybe it's Kevon Looney, and that's it, and their center position is fixed. But you and I both expect them to at least address the center position with at least one player, maybe with the minimum, a veteran minimum salary, maybe with a mid-level exception, something like that. Is that sort of your sense too?
Yeah, obviously the big X factor here is Kevon Looney. If Kevon can return to the player that he was, not this past season, but the season before, then I think that they feel pretty good about their center rotation. You know, you probably, I think they would actually still start Marquese Chriss, even if Kevon is back to his old form. You know, you start Marquese Chriss, you have Kevon playing 20, 25 minutes a night. And then you have whoever you get, either maybe in the draft, you could get someone early in the second round, depending on what they do, or you could they trade down in the draft, or maybe they bring someone in on a minimum contract to kind of round out that center rotation. You can actually get good value at that center position on minimum contracts in this league. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of good examples with the Warriors of that. You know, they got David West on a vet minimum contract. That was obviously a unique situation. They got Zaza Pachulia for a little bit over the minimum. They got JaVale McGee. You know, they got all those guys who were helpful players for them at or around a minimum contract. And so I don't think that it's crazy to think that they can do that again. And I think, and I also don't think, because of that, I don't think that they would end up, that they would use their mid-level on a center. That just doesn't make financial sense.
I think they would use their mid-level on a couple of centers that are out there, but those centers are like pipe dream type scenarios. We're talking about like Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. Like, you call them, and I think if you got either of them, they'd be perfect fits for what the Warriors want to do. You call them, you say, hey, are you willing to take the mid-level exception? they're going to they most likely say no because they're worth more than the mid-level exception, even at this point in their careers. But you at least make the call. And
they've
then
also won an NBA title.
Yeah, so exactly. Like, they may not be necessarily. It could go the other way. They could have gotten the taste of the NBA title and just only want that for now on. But who knows? I think you. It's. But they are prepared to have Marquise play center, even if another option, a better option, comes along. But okay, so that's the center rotation. So we say they're not going to use a top five pick on a center, most likely.
The world of protein bars is being rebuilt by Built Bar. This is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. A protein bar covered in 100% real chocolate. It's delicious. With 16 amazing flavors, Built Bar tastes like a candy bar while delivering fewer sugars and carbs, making it better tasting and better for you than any of the competitors. With delicious flavors like mint brownie, raspberry chocolate cream, and toffee almond, Built Bar is like a cheat code for health-conscious men and women everywhere. These bars are low calorie and low sugar, while also being high in protein and fiber, making them perfect for ketogenic and other low-carb diets. For me, I go back and forth between keto and low-carb diets, and no matter what my healthy eating pattern, Built Bar is perfect for me. One of my personal favorite flavors, by the way, peanut butter brownie, is packed with 20 grams of protein with just 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, and just 3 net carbs. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off of your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, one word, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
So what are they going to use their top five pick on? Because now you're looking at a bunch of point guards at the top of this draft. There's a few wings in the mix as well. Obi Toppin has been out there for a while, connected to the Warriors. He's sort of this power forward center tweener type. I'm starting to feel like they are... They have roles in their minds, this coaching staff does, that they want to fill. And those specific roles are the Andre Iguodala roles and the Sean Livingston roles. And this is why, again, this is a team that sort of figured out the formula that works. And I think they're going to keep following that formula. They moved D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins because Andrew Wiggins fits their formula better than D'Angelo Russell did, even if Wiggins is not as good a player in a vacuum as Russell is. They are not going to pick a center in the top five because they have a formula at that position that has worked. I still think they are going to follow the formula that has worked for them. And so what they need is to reprise those roles that Iguodala and Livingston played. And that means just guys who make smart decisions with and without the ball in their hands and are switchable on defense. And I don't think shooting is as big a concern at those spots as those other things that I just mentioned. Is that kind of your sense too?
Yeah, for sure. I think obviously it comes down to what the pick is. And, you know, yesterday would have been, you and I probably would have been in Chicago yesterday if we lived in a normal world. We would have been at the draft lottery, which I'm kind of bummed about because I've always wanted to go to that. But and so we still don't even know when the draft lottery is going to be. And, you know, that's obviously the day that we learn what pick they have. And as we've talked about before, they actually have a much higher percentage chance of getting the number five pick in the draft than the number one pick. They have a 14% chance at the number one pick and almost a 50% chance at the number five pick. So I do think that whenever we talk about this, you know, it's really easy just to talk about what they would do with the number one pick, but we should actually be placing more of an emphasis on what they would actually do with the number five pick, because that's more likely of happening. As we've talked about, as I've written, I do think that if they get the number one pick, they take Anthony Edwards, and they just keep it simple. Take Anthony Edwards. I'm not going to go on into all the reasons for that because we've talked a lot about it. He's just the best athlete in this draft. I think he has the highest upside. He's got true all-star potential on both sides of the ball. So I think they take Anthony Edwards out of Georgia. Now, if they have any of the other five picks in the top five.
Let me stop you there because I do think you're absolutely right with Anthony Edwards. I did forget one thing that they're looking for at the top. Like, yes, they're trying to get guys who can play the Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston role. They're basically looking for a sixth and seventh guy, right? I don't think on this roster they have that. As much as whatever you think of Eric Paschal, Kevon Looney, the health issues with him, Jordan Poole, and all the progress he made toward the end of it, those are not your sixth and seventh men in a playoff rotation next year. They're just not. And so you could get a top five pick if you hit this pick.
that player could end up playing that role immediately. Like, that's not out of the question. And I think with Anthony Edwards, he checks these boxes, right? Like, he just, whatever you think about these other guys, it's so easy to just sort of get in the weeds with this. But with the Warriors, I just want to go back to this. They're looking for guys who check the boxes of what they need. They have a formula that works. Anthony Edwards, he can handle the ball. You know, was his efficiency numbers great at Georgia? No, but they got better at the end of the year when Georgia started figuring out how to use him a little bit better. He projects as a switchable defender. But the other thing that he has is just this elite level athleticism that is so hard to find. You can't find it in the middle of the first round. You can't find it in free agents.
That's what Andre had coming into his draft.
That's right.
Andre wasn't a guy who was overly productive at Arizona. I believe he averaged 12 points per game his sophomore year there. He wasn't a guy who blew people away in college, but he was a freak athlete. And the Sixers, who took him, projected him, you know, having a long NBA career solely because he just had the physical tools. And that matters. And especially, I think, a lot of times defensively, you know, you got to be able to guard multiple positions. You got to be able to stay in front of, you know, quicker, smaller point guards and things like that. And kind of to hit on what you were talking about earlier. Yeah, sure. They'd like to fill those Sean Livingston and Iguodala roles. But I do think that when you're drafting in the top five, you want to be drafting someone who at least has a chance to be a franchise type guy. I mean, you don't want to draft a guy that you think his ceiling is like what Sean Livingston's career was, which Sean Livingston, look, especially given his situation, given the catastrophic knee injury he had a very, you know, good NBA career. But I don't think that's necessarily tremendous value in the top five.
I don't think I was clear. They're looking for guys who could play that role right away and then potentially develop, because they're also looking for that athleticism that allows that player to develop into potentially a franchise player later down the line. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you kind of look at the top of this draft too, those are sort of the dudes that are there, right? Like, I know this is not a great draft, but for the Warriors and what they need, it's not a bad draft. If you're looking at specific to their team needs, you've got guys like Anthony Edwards at number one. And like you said, there's a far better chance that they end up at number five. And if they're at number five, I still think there's guys in the mix like Auburn's Isaac Okoro, Denny Avija, Tyrese Halliburton, who I really like. And you're really liking Okoro lately.
I like Okoro. I like Halliburton. I still like Denny. For whatever reason, people have stopped talking about Denny. I don't really know why. Yeah. I still like him just as much as I did last month. He's, you know, nothing has changed. He hasn't played any more games. No one else has either. So we shouldn't like him less now. You know, I still think he has a lot of upside. I think that I can understand the concerns about his shooting, but you know, one thing I wanted to ask you about, and I know you wrote about this in your mailbag today. By the way, you didn't answer my mailbag question. Thank you.
What was your mailbag question? Oh, why I like Halliburton more than Ball?
Yeah.
All right, I'll answer it right now. I like Halliburton more than Ball because he has all the things that LaMelo Ball has, and yet we're not talking about how, like, it's one of these weird, he's like right in front of us and we're not paying attention to him. He's a genius level passer, the same as LaMelo Ball is. I would say he probably functions better within a motion offense than LaMelo Ball does. Like, LaMelo Ball can only function as a passer if he has the ball in his hands. I feel like Halliburton moves the ball a little bit quicker than Ball does. And he's a better spot up shooter. It's not even close. He's a knockdown spot up shooter. He is way better defensively. Like he's just better than LaMelo Ball in all facets. Like, he's older than LaMelo. That's the problem. And LaMelo projects as a better athlete, but I don't think the Ball family, like any of those guys, are like super athletes. So like, LaMelo's not so much of their athlete that you would just say between age and athleticism, I'm taking him over Halliburton. But give me Halliburton, man.
It's
and
not like
there's
Halliburton's old. He's 20.
I know, he's only 20, and it's like, what are we talking about here? And look, I know that he's not this,
late February.
He's not the super athlete that's going to jump through the building. And I know that that's a concern for the Warriors. But if he's there at five, like, you don't take him at number one because you do take the athlete there. But I think if you're at four, if you're at five, I really think he's in the mix. And I love, I don't think we give enough credit to that in-between game, that just basketball feel. Of all the guys at the top of this draft, his basketball feel is by far the best. And I put a lot of emphasis on that. So that's why I have him over Ball.
I personally think it wouldn't be crazy to me if Haliburton got number one buzz. I think he does elite things, and he doesn't have a lot of holes in his game. I mean, you're going to talk about his slight frame. A lot of great players enter the league with a slight frame. Kevin Durant, that was the big knock on him. Did that end up mattering? No.
And people think Haliburton can put on weight. They don't think that this is the end all be all. Like, he's not Lou Williams, right? Like, where it's yeah, like, this it's, is just your size ball forever.
It's just as skinny, if not more so. Right. So the thing I wanted to ask you was your thoughts on Killian Hayes, because he's been a guy. This is a draft where we all have a little bit too much time to analyze it. And I think because of that, people kind of can develop almost irrational infatuations with prospects. And it feels like a lot of people are becoming infatuated with Killian Hayes. I'm personally not a huge Killian Hayes fan, and I wanted your thoughts on him.
I'm with you. There's like, so I know that Kevin O'Connor for the Ringer put Killian Hayes at the top of his big board, and that sort of started this craze. But I know like the Athletic Bay Area has like this infatuation with Killian Hayes too. And so now for those combinations of things has sort of turned this Killian Hayes to the Warriors buzz, like on social media that I've seen. And you and I have not heard that from, like, I don't want to speak for you, but I think we've talked about this offline before, where we're not hearing that buzz from the Warriors like that. They don't love Killian Hayes the way that a lot of people love Killian Hayes. And the simple reason for this is, look, they didn't love the D'Angelo Russell experiment. And Killian Hayes, I like Killian Hayes in a vacuum as a prospect. I don't like him number one. I think he's a lottery guy. But I if the D'Angelo Russell thing didn't work, then that's not like that's sort of his game. I don't see it working for the Warriors. And maybe you could say, like, look, you had to pay D'Angelo Russell a max contract, and for Killian Hayes, you'd be paying him significantly less. You're looking at maybe, like, you know, $8 to $10 million a year, depending on where you pick him. And for a backup point guard, that's not that bad, but he can't play next to Steph Curry. I think you can find better value elsewhere in the top five. I don't love the fit at all. And he's one of these prospects who's like, well, he could do this. He could do this. He could do this. Like, he doesn't do anything. He just can do a lot of things. And I'm like, wait, like, wake me up when he actually does the things that you're saying he could do. And that's why, like, we fall into this trap every year. Like, oh, well, he could do some of these things. Like, well, he doesn't. So what do I care?
Yeah, that you hit on my issue as well, which is he has a lot of the hallmarks of a bust. He looks like an NBA, like, he's got the fluidity. He has the, you know, ball control. He has, you know, kind of the general feel for the game. Like, he looks poised out there, right? He kind of looks like he knows what he's doing, and he's young. And so I think a lot of people look at that and they're like, yeah, you know, this guy could be Tony Parker. But he doesn't actually do anything great. He looks like he looks good, but he doesn't actually do anything great. He's not an elite athlete in any way, shape, or form. His shot is streaky at best. He's a good passer. I don't think he's an elite passer. I don't think there's anything that he can really hang his hat on yet in the NBA. And guys like that tend to go by the wayside in the NBA. I think there's a decent chance that Killian Hayes is Cameron Payne. I think there's a decent chance that he has no impact in the NBA at all. Now, I think the odds are he'll probably have a solid career in the NBA as like a backup point guard / fringe starter, but that is not a good investment in the top five of the NBA draft.
To be very specific with him, there's a couple of things that bother me. Well, this is not that specific. Defensively, he's not there. Like, he's just not there defensively. On offense, this is a guy who's supposed to be able to run your offense. He's supposed to be able. You're right. He's not an elite passer. He's an okay passer. He's a good passer, but he's not elite. He's not LaMelo. He's not Haliburton. But he really can only dribble with one hand. He only goes to one side. He only goes right, I think, when he's running the floor, when he's running offense. And that, like, That's a problem. And the way to fix that is a lot of time with the ball in your hands. And the Warriors can't give him that. So he's going to be drafted to a team that has zero point guard, right? That's where he ought to be drafted, is a place where he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, and he's going to be able to work his way through those mistakes. And the Warriors have this – they have a championship window, and it is tough to balance, getting a player who could be the franchise player, the franchise superstar later, but who can turn into that without needing the ball in his hands all the time, and while he's developing, can contribute within a playoff rotation. That's sort of what they need here with that pick. Killian Hayes is not that player to me. Let's talk about then who those players are. I know you like Isaac Okoro. We like Denny. I really like Haliburton. Is there another guy that I haven't talked about that?
I wanted to say one more quick thing about Killian Hayes. Okay. One thing that's a little bit of a red flag to me about Killian Hayes is that he was in the French league, which is a pretty good overseas league, couldn't crack the rotation, and so went to the German league, which is a significantly worse league, to pad his numbers, and then put up pretty decent numbers. Wasn't dominant by any means, but put up pretty decent numbers, getting a lot of minutes in the German league, and now all of a sudden everyone loves him. And it's like, the guy couldn't crack the rotation in the French league. I think it was brilliant on his part, but I really believe that he's a guy that if he had played this year with Arizona or North Carolina, he wouldn't have been a dominant player even at the college level. I think that he played his cards perfectly, and that's why he's even in this conversation.
I agree. We see that a lot, and then we see the opposite happen with guys who try to do that, and they don't succeed, and we just forget about them. Okay, let's wrap up this podcast just in general. If you're what are you hearing? What's your sense of what the Warriors top five looks like on if you were to guess? And look, it's still fluid. We don't know when the draft is even. The draft actually, for the record, has not been postponed yet. It's still scheduled for June 25th. It's going to get pushed back. It just hasn't yet. I just thought that was interesting. Anthony Edwards, you and I agree that if the Warriors get the number one pick, that's the guy on top of their board. He checks too many boxes. The ceiling is too high for them not to go in that direction. After him, I still think it's pretty fluid. I would say it's probably Denny at this point.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance it's Denny. I had been hearing like a month ago that he was kind of moving into that number two spot on their board. It's been fluid. I think it's hard to kind of put them in tiers quite yet, but I would say for me, I think the guys that make the most sense for the Warriors are Anthony Edwards, Denny, Tyrese Haliburton, Isaac Okoro. And honestly, I'm going to leave it right there. I think that those, with that four guys, I think they're going to end up drafting one of those four guys.
You're probably right, because LaMelo is going to, you left out LaMelo, and he's probably going to go in the top four, right?
I left out LaMelo, Obi, James Wiseman, Killian Hayes, Onyeka.
Yeah, so chances are like,
draft any of those guys.
No, and chances are like those guys are going to go in the top four somewhere, right? So even if the Warriors end up with the fifth pick, one of those four guys you mentioned one of those four guys are going to be available.
And the truth is, whether or not they draft number two or draft number five, they might end up drafting the same guy. You know, Denny could go number two, could go number five. Same with Haliburton. Same with a lot of these guys. It wouldn't shock me. I know it would shock a lot of people, but if they got like the number two pick in the draft, it would not surprise me at all if they took someone like Haliburton. I don't think anyone would be having that on their mock drafts, but it would not surprise me at all.
I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. And look, I don't think, and the more work they do, this front office does on this draft, the less chatter there is about them trading down or out of this draft completely. I think they're going to talk themselves into a couple of guys that they really are comfortable with taking, and they're going to go ahead and feel comfortable with that. And look, they owe it to themselves with all this work. They have been preparing for a top five pick since December. Like, they owe it to themselves to make this selection. Like, that scouting department has worked their ass off, and the coaching department has gotten to
it. I talked to Bob Myers yesterday, and he said, honestly, the lack of the NCAA tournament, the lack of in-person workouts, it's not as big a deal as people think.
That stuff hurts the fringe, like what they do with the second round picks, what they do to fill out the summer league and the G League rosters. That's what that stuff matters for. This, like, there's enough tape on these guys and there's enough information on these guys at the top of the draft that you don't need that stuff.
Right. And he actually said, you know, when you have all that stuff, sometimes it's really hard to not give in to recency bias. Mm-hmm. And now, because you don't have that, you're less likely to succumb to that, which is in some ways a positive.
Yeah. So, all right, we'll tie a bow on this. For the record, I agree with those four names. I think those are the four names that Warriors fans should be looking at. It's pretty tight for the Warriors, I think. Like, I don't think there's a whole lot of wiggle room. If they trade back, it's not going to be out of the – I don't think they move out of the back half – the. I don't think they move out of the front part of the lottery, right? So I think they'll, even if they move back, if there's a trade – somebody offers them a trade-up situation, they're still probably picking within the top six or seven. I really don't think that they want to move back that much further. They owe it to themselves, again, to pick at the top of this thing, go get a guy who could be a real player for them going forward. But, Connor, I know you got to go. So thanks for jumping on here. Tell our listeners where they can read your stuff and find your work.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at @con_cron. Read all my stuff at sfchronicle.com. I also have my own podcast, Warriors Off Court. Give that a listen.
Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, where you can rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, one word, to get $10 off your first box of Built Bars at BuiltBar.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe.